On November 7th, voters in the city of Kalamazoo will elect a mayor and three city commissioners. Last Wednesday, WMUK invited the candidates to a public forum in Sangren Hall in cooperation with Western Michigan University's Institute of Government and Politics. WMUK's Gordon Evans moderated the event that included all but one of the candidates.
Well, good evening, and thank you very much for joining us tonight for our forum for Kalamazoo city candidates for both the city commission and for mayor. We were holding off and hoping we would get Leona Carter in here, who is one of the candidates. We're still hoping maybe she will be here in time, but we are going to get started as it's just a little after 7. I'm Gordon Evans from WMUK Radio. We are proud to co-sponsor this forum with Western Michigan University's Institute of Government and Politics. And before we get started tonight, I would like to introduce Peter Wielhauer, professor from Western Michigan University and from the Institute of Government and Politics.
Thank you. Thank you, Gordon, very much. Candidates, thank you so much for coming tonight. I'm looking forward to a great forum. Audience, thank you so much for coming. I know some of you are students, and I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be in a place where you didn't have to be to learn about the candidates and learn about the issues that are going to be coming into play in our election next month here in Kalamazoo. So on behalf of the Department of Political Science, the Institute of Government and Politics, and Western Michigan University, welcome to you all, and let's have a great time. Thank you.
Thank you. Candidates, you will step up to the microphone when it's your turn for opening statements and questions. I would advise you to get pretty close to the microphone, not right on top of it, but 6 inches or so away, to make sure you're heard out in the House. Our format for this evening, the candidates will have 30 seconds for opening statements, and then after that we'll move to questions. The candidates will have 1 minute to answer each question. All of them will get the same question, all six, maybe seven if Leona Carter gets here, will answer the question. And on the final round, each candidate will get 90 seconds, so a minute and a half. Candidates, how you use that extra 30 seconds is up to you. You can answer the question, then give a 30-second closing statement. You can give a more complete answer to the final question. You can maybe go back and revisit an issue we discussed earlier, or perhaps bring something up that we didn't get to tonight. With that, let's move on to opening statements. We have drawn the names to begin. We're going to start with the City Commission candidates, and we will begin with Jack Urban. 30 seconds for your opening statement. Please step up to the microphone.
Well, hello. I'm currently a city commissioner. This is my second term. I have county governance experience because before I became a city commissioner, I was a county commissioner for three terms. So 15 seconds already. So I think of myself as a problem solver. I used to work for ISAAC, so I have grassroots organizing experience as well. Please consider that when you decide whom to vote for. Thank you.
Eric Cunningham, your opening statement, 30 seconds.
Well, first I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. I am a born and raised citizen of Kalamazoo City. I am a WMU Bronco twice over, and I sat on the Kalamazoo City Commission in 2015, and I'm just looking for the honor to continue to serve for you.
Charlie Koss, your opening statement.
Hi, yes, I'm Charlie Koss. I was born in Michigan. I lived in Kalamazoo for the last 20 years. I'm a Western grad. I got a BA and MPA from here. I'm running for office to bring a different voice. I think that we need different voices on the commission. And when you have different voices, you get better outcomes. So I hope you can visit my website, votecost.com.
Erin Knott, opening statement.
Good evening. My name is Erin Knott. I, too, am a Bronco. I've lived in the city of Kalamazoo for over 20 years. I began my career working in community development and have spent the last 10 plus years working as a political strategist. I am a teacher in the School of Social Work. I teach a policy class and a grassroots organizing class, and I'm a proud member of the PIO. I hope you'll reconsider voting for me again on November 7th.
Bobby Hopewell, opening statement.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for being here. I'm Bobby Hopewell. I'm the mayor of the city of Kalamazoo and have been the mayor for 10 years. I am excited to be here because I am a Bronco, and I know all the hard work that you're doing every single day here at Western, and I really believe that together, as we try to move this community, we can create great things. We can move us in the direction that we want to go. So we need all of you. Thanks for being here, and look forward to the questions.
And Chris Wamhoff, the other candidate for mayor, you have an opening statement, 30 seconds.
Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Chris Wamhoff. I'm running for mayor. I was born in Plainwell. I was raised on food stamps. I work for $9.50 without health insurance. I'm running for mayor because I have seen this city cater to rich people for a really long time and not cater to anybody in my neighborhood. I'm not taking any money for my campaign. I'm not going to take any money if I become mayor because I want to work on fixing the city for people who aren't billionaires.
We'll move on to questions, and we'll kind of change the order each round. We will go with the City Commission candidates first, and then the candidates for mayor. So we'll begin this round of questioning with Eric Cunningham. And this first question comes from the urban politics class at Western Michigan University. Why do you believe that the city finds itself in a persistent structural deficit and needs the aid of the Foundation for Excellence? And how does a property tax cut help the city's financial situation? You have 1 minute to answer.
Well, there's a quite a bit of history that has led to the circumstance where structurally our taxes aren't really covering our expenses. When we go back to the Headley Amendment, and there's another one somewhere in the mid-90s, kind of restricted our ability to leverage more taxes. And over time, we ran into a situation where inflation expanded programs weren't really meeting the needs of this community. And that's kind of what led to our current circumstance. Luckily, we have what we call the Foundation for Excellence, and there are individuals in this community who have stepped up to subsidize a portion of our budget. And let me get the second part of that question again.
How does a property tax cut help the city's financial situation?
I think that helps in a lot of different ways. It creates an opportunity for other agencies or other businesses to come into our community and actually find a ground to actually invest. It makes us competitive with our neighbors, which is Portage and other...
Thank you. Time's up. Thank
Portage
you.
And other
Thank
areas
you.
In our
Thank
community.
You. Thank you. Charlie Koss, the same question for you.
Well, this problem took a long time to get into. As in the 90s, when the economy was doing well, a lot of cities didn't plan for the future, didn't put money aside. And when we had a crash in 1999, of course, you had a change in the revenue, change in structure. You had the thought was, let's do more with less. So more services, less. And you have a knock-on effect where you have businesses that are in trouble, and the services are being chased by higher taxes, moving the taxes up, chasing the businesses out, and this perpetual cycle. Fortunately, right now with Foundation for Excellence, we have an opportunity here to knock down the tax base. We also have an opportunity to do things like infrastructure to be able to bring businesses here, encourage them to come to Kalamazoo, create better jobs. Better jobs will help raise everybody's income. It'll help put more revenues in.
Thank you. Aaron Knott, same question for you.
Thank you. This problem isn't unique to the city of Kalamazoo. Municipalities across the state of Michigan are struggling with income because of revenue cost sharing, the dramatic decrease in revenue cost sharing. And this covers several different governors of the state of Michigan. It's not a Republican problem. It's not a Democratic problem. Our situation in Kalamazoo is exasperated by the fact that 51% of our properties are owned by nonprofit organizations. So we're not able to collect property taxes. The Foundation for Excellence in rolling back our tax from 19 mils to 12 mils gives us an opportunity to be competitive with municipalities like Portage or the townships. I've heard from dozens of folks that have bought homes outside of the city of Kalamazoo or opened businesses outside of the Kalamazoo because it was too cost prohibitive. So this is an economic engine. Hopefully it will attract new businesses, new homeowners, and help us decrease the amount of properties that are owned by nonprofits.
Jack Urban, same question for you.
Well, I think that it's important to stress one of the things that Aaron Knott just said, we have a lot of property within the city of Kalamazoo that's off the tax rolls. That's a fact of life. We don't want to change that. Western is a big asset. That's off the tax rolls. Both hospitals are off the tax rolls. Lots of nonprofits and churches are off the tax rolls. In addition, we haven't been receiving our share, or no cities in Michigan have been receiving the amount of revenue sharing that was promised them by the state. Thirdly, we have basically two Kalamazoos. That's a product of our history and our habits. We have a wealthy, prosperous part of our city and a not so prosperous part. That's a problem that we need to address once and for all. Mr. Trump has taken the Band-Aid off of this issue, and now it's out for us all to see.
Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't get
to
finish.
Thank you. We'll go to the candidates for mayor. We'll start with Chris Wamhoff on this question. Again, why do you believe the city finds itself in a persistent structural deficit and needs the aid of the Foundation for Excellence? And how does a property tax cut help the city's financial situation?
All right. Well, we find ourselves in this situation because on a federal level, on a state level, and on a local level, we go to large corporations often. We've had a lot of the wealthier people get to decide how the rules work. and a lot of the tax cuts that we did here locally end up being paid for by people in my neighborhood in Edison for things like having a fence that's in their front yard, because now that's an ordinance. We disproportionately put it that way to pay for these tax cuts. The Foundation for Excellence, we had an opportunity to not take the Foundation for Excellence and still get the property tax cuts as well. We could have done it with a progressive income tax. Any tax is going to favor you or not favor you depending on what you give up for it. And I would say that these tax cuts didn't help us because we gave up a lot more than we got.
Bobby Hopewell, same question for you.
If I were to ask you, if you had 54% less in your pocket today, how would you survive? How would you make it to the next day? It would be rough. That's the challenge. This university, the largest property owner in our city, does not pay taxes, but it's important to the city. Absolutely. We know that if we want to be competitive, we have to have a tax rate that attracts business, creates jobs in our community. That's why we lowered the property tax millage. It's not a simple issue in regards to how we got here, the feds, the state. When we talk about shared revenue, everyone uses that term. Really, I talk about it as money that is supposed to come back to the city. We give the state the process. They're supposed to take a little off the top and give it back. About $2.8 million they haven't given us back over the last couple years, and that all adds up. That's why we're in the situation that we're in.
Move on to our next question. We'll start this round with Charlie Koss. How is it possible to improve the water system in regards to the lead levels while also improving the city's budget situation? And again, this question comes from the urban politics class at Western Michigan University.
Well, one of the things I'm running on is to get the lead out. And the reason for that is that obviously we have some plumes. We have some areas where the lead is higher. In general, they're working through that. Fortunately, the Foundation for Excellence has given us some money towards that. I think that the water department is going to need to put some more money in, think out of the box, and concentrate on the hot areas, get that done, and move into getting more and more pipes replaced throughout the city and creating a more efficient system so that in the future the actual outlays would be lower, and trying to build in some efficiencies while getting all that done at the same time.
Aaron Knott, same question on lead in the city's water.
Sure. So I'm going to start by saying Kalamazoo's water is safe. We have a public service department that annually tests water. We publish our water results. We have a public service department that is willing to come to your house and test the water for free. I know of a resident recently who bought a new home and had public services come out, tested their water, and found out that there were elevated lead levels, and so we expedited a replacement of those pipes. The Foundation for Excellence has allowed us this summer to increase our lead pipe removal. We are removing over 400 pipes from the city of Kalamazoo. On the city of Kalamazoo's website, we have a list of where we know that there are lead pipes, and I encourage any of you, if you own your home or if you're in an apartment, you can go onto the website, you can look up where those pipes are and see whether or not you do have a lead pipe. But again, the Foundation for Excellence is allowing us to expedite the removal of lead pipes, and my overall message is our water is safe.
Jack Urban, same question for you.
Well, I think that the fact that we've practically quadrupled the rate at which we're replacing the lead pipes in Kalamazoo is really accelerating our long-held policy of eliminating that. We have to remember that lead concentrations stay pretty low as long as the water is moving. There's lots of use of water. Where it's really high is with people living alone. It builds up. And the other question was, what the other part of the question?
The other part of the question was also improving the city's budget situation while addressing lead levels.
There's always, the water supply is funded by a water rate that we all pay. We always can raise that. That's the way to expedite it, is just increase the water rates.
Eric Cunningham, same question for you on improving the water system in regards to the lead levels.
So, as stated, the water is safe. That's what the studies have shown. We do have issues where maybe a household or two doesn't really meet that need. And in those cases, we have the Foundation for Excellence. 2 years ago, when I sat on the city commission, there was no foundation. There was no extra money. There was no opportunity to have aspirational goals to go beyond our normal. And so I'm thankful for the Foundation for Excellence. And I think that doesn't solve the problem, but I think it does assist us in allowing us to change our decisions when we are trying to address the issue.
And now we'll hear from the candidates for mayor on the same question, beginning with Bobby Hopewell.
Well, with the Foundation for Excellence and being that lead pipes are part of our targeting with that those dollars, I think that it doesn't impact the budget per se. Again, our water is safe. You're going to hear that over and over. But we do have challenges with homes that have copper and lead pipes within their homes, and that's a private home issue that I think we will also be able to develop some strategies with the Foundation's support to work with homeowners to get rid of those pipes within their houses. And not just the pipes, we have lead paint. You probably heard of it chipping off of old off walls and old houses, and children sometimes getting in contact with that, sometimes eating that paint from window seals and whatever. These are the challenges that we had no real opportunity to dive into aggressively and to really improve. And I think that because of the decisions that we've made most recently, we're going to be able to do that work. Thank you.
Chris Wamhoff, same question for you on improving the water system in regards to the lead levels while also improving the city's budget situation.
Well, I walk with a cane because I went in water that the state of Michigan said was safe over the oil spill 6 years ago here. So I do agree that Kalamazoo is taking all the efforts they need to, but we're relying on state certifications that say that they test for 4 or 5 different chemicals. PCBs is something we have to worry about in Kalamazoo, and that's 18 chemicals by itself at least. Those chemicals compound with anything else. Flint started because there was a small within 1,000th miscalculation of chemicals. We do not do enough to understand what's in our water, not just as a Kalamazoo problem, but as a state problem. Kalamazoo has a very special kind of water system, and we need to be ahead of the curve because of the kind of water system we have to know what kind of chemicals we have, because we rely on organics to keep our water safe.
Move on to our next question. We'll begin with Aaron Knott, the chairman of the Kalamazoo County Public Housing Commission, who is also a Kalamazoo City Commissioner, David Anderson, recently reported that lower-income families are having trouble finding affordable housing in Kalamazoo. What should the city be doing to ensure that there is a supply of affordable housing to meet demands in the city?
So we have an affordable housing crisis. We have a shortage of affordable housing as well as workforce housing. We cannot concentrate these units just in our urban neighborhoods. We need to spread out opportunities for all housing access across the city of Kalamazoo. And I believe the Foundation for Excellence will be a tool to help us with this. If you look at our master plan that came out of the Imagine Kalamazoo 2025 process, we've identified the need to expand housing opportunities for our seniors all the way down to our students. At a work session that the commission had a couple weeks ago, we learned of a pilot project that might be coming to fruition with the organization, the Local Initiative Support Corporation, which will allow us to leverage upwards of $20 million into this community to help build affordable housing units. Finally, we need to invest in organizations that are doing this work but need more capacity, more resources to do the work. Kalamazoo Neighborhood Housing Services, the LIFT Foundation, Housing Resources, they have proven track records. Let's support them so that they continue building.
Jack Urban.
Well, that supply is used up, and there's not enough of it. Besides having the housing be affordable, it needs to be safe, and it needs to be convenient, too. A lot of people that are living in affordable housing would like to not have to spend a lot of extra money on transportation. So that's the convenient part. I was at a Housing Matters meeting this afternoon where Dorla Bonner, who is our city housing expert who handles all the federal money that comes in for that purpose, told us that there's lots of good programs already in Kalamazoo, but they're on a very small scale. They're just a few units at a time doing various things. What we need is more money to increase the capacity of these programs that already are in existence. And that's something that they're working on through the things that Aaron just mentioned.
Eric Cunningham. Same question for you on affordable housing in the city of Kalamazoo.
So part of the issue is affordable housing cost effective? If, as a business owner, when I come to the table, I want to make sure that my investment will return income that will sustain my whatever my investment is. And so streamlining a lot of this, finding ways to invest in our community, invest into the infrastructure is the key to making sure that we have affordable housing here in the community. Downtown, it was the most recent study, I believe, said there was room for about 4,000 more units that could be placed downtown. So how do we make sure that it's a priority as a commission? That's something that a question that we will be answering here in the near future when we look at our master plan. And I think that, like I said before, the Foundation for Excellence allows us to have those deeper conversations and actually not only allows us to have the conversation, but to invest into the process.
Charlie Koss.
The affordable housing situation in Kalamazoo has deteriorated over the last 30, 40 years or so, and it tracked with the economy, et cetera. It's a very slow-moving train. It's like Aaron and everybody else was saying, you know, there's a lot of partnerships, there's a lot of resources that can be brought in. The problem is that you need developers to come in, you need people to do that. I was on CDAC where, you know, we were taking HUD money and reallocating it for different types of organizations to help build affordable housing, either KNHS or et cetera. But there's a limited stream and there's limited properties. So the part of the plan is to open up areas, multi-unit housing, a lot of the smaller micro-housing that can go on, which would be more affordable, lower cost, $500 rents, things like that. So you need to rethink the way the housing is in Kalamazoo by bringing it to the price point that people need.
Now we'll go to the candidates for mayor. We'll start with Chris Wamhoff on this question regarding affordable housing in the city of Kalamazoo.
Yeah, I think there's some local things we can do right away to kind of fix some of it, is to get with the county land bank and undo some of the changes we've made in how we do house auctions in the last 6 years. A lot of the houses that we go and put into foreclosure, we go into tax foreclosure. Those can auction off really easily and often go to out-of-state people. We need to get those to people here. For the people that are in rentals that are going into a city tax foreclosure, those people need to have the first dibs on that house. For all of these houses where people are getting ready to lose their homes, we need to give them an opportunity to get back into them. And if they can't do it, we need to give the opportunities to other people in the city that are trying to get a home instead of somebody in California or New York.
Bobby Hopewell.
A couple things that haven't been said because, you know, you've heard us repeat, and that's the challenge with this type of forum. But one of the things we're working with on is when a developer comes and wants to purchase property that the city owns and they want to build housing, there's an expectation that part of that housing will be affordable or workforce housing. So that's one of the opportunities we have. We'll probably be announcing a project here in the next couple, 3 to 4 months that's doing just that downtown. The second, I want you to look up a company, Perfect Little House. This company is an architectural company that's working with the land bank and others to deal with these infill locations where we have taken down houses, some of them extremely gone, some of them, I'm not a contractor, so I don't know the status of every house. But these are opportunities to have new, brand new houses that are affordable and unique and that can be built. We're going to be building some on the east side, and I look forward to those projects coming to fruition. Thanks.
We'll move on to our next question. This one comes from the audience. I'm going to preface it by noting that the state, beginning in December, is going to allow local communities to decide whether or not they want to opt in for these types of businesses. We'll begin with Jack Urban. What is your stance on marijuana?
Well, it's a double-edged sword. People are kind of excited about the revenue that can come from that. But no matter what you think about marijuana, it's still not good for kids, and it's going to be more available. If it becomes legal, I'm not going to oppose it, but I want us to follow the state law and not try to carve out anything special here that makes it more complicated for people who want to do a legal business in it. So that's it.
Eric Cunningham.
My stance is I am for medicinal marijuana. I do believe that we should follow state guidelines, state laws. I think this is a grand opportunity to invest in some small business opportunities and to ensure that those who are from our community are capitalizing on these small business opportunities.
Charlie Koss, same question for you.
Let's see. This is a hard one, but I have a libertarian streak in me, so I think, well, you know, it's up to the individual to choose what they want. And so on a certain level, I'm for it. I'm not going to give you a two-sided answer. That basically, I'm for it as long as it's well-regulated. I think that, you know, we all know the effects are detrimental to kids. And whether or not it's legal or not legal, kids will get access to it. So the idea is to still keep chasing those problems and try and keep it from the kids and educate people on proper use of it. I think it could be a benefit in the community as long as it's properly regulated in the manufacturing and the processing and the five different aspects that the city has applied for through the state. Those need to be regulated properly. It would bring some investment in town, and I think it's better to at least be on top of it in an open, transparent way where we know what's going on rather than it being underground.
Aaron Knott.
Thank you. Like my colleagues, I support municipal marijuana. As many of you know in the audience, I work in politics, and I'm monitoring the 2018 ballot initiatives that are going to be presented for our consideration next November. And I believe marijuana will be on the ballot, and I believe that we need to pass that ballot initiative to decriminalize marijuana because I think that it's a gateway drug. And what do I mean by that? It's a gateway for communities of color to be prosecuted and incarcerated at a higher proportion than their white counterparts. So I believe in municipal marijuana. I think that we need to decriminalize marijuana, and I look forward to that ballot initiative next year.
Bobby Hopewell, going to the candidates for mayor now. Bobby Hopewell.
I think you're going to hear the same thing from most of us. Municipal medical marijuana, certainly we have already been planning. We have our ordinances and guidelines that are going to be rolling out here in the next couple months, which are in line with state law. We know that there will be a ballot initiative, and everyone will have their opportunity to vote on what we do in regards to marijuana general access. I couldn't agree more with Commissioner Knott in regards to the effects that this drug has on communities, particularly communities of color. That's why a number of years ago we made it our lowest priority enforcement. So I look forward to the changes that are coming. Thanks.
Chris Wamhoff, same question for you, your stance on marijuana.
I'm a cardholder. I am all about it. And I think that Kalamazoo doesn't need to be complacent. I think Kalamazoo needs to be a leader. Not because I think it's fun to smoke or whatever. Obviously, I do. But I think that we need to do it because you get two tiers for both city and county in your taxes for it. For that same thing, I think it's time to turn it around because I know when we talk about it over where I live, that's what everybody's waiting for because it's a job opportunity for them. Local people do want this, and they want a lot more than the couple we're talking about giving out. And I want to give them that opportunity. We got all these buildings in Northside. We got all these buildings in Eastside. We got all the buildings out there by Fulton on Edison over there. And there's an opportunity for us to go there, get these for people, get them jobs that are in their neighborhood, get them to be a part of it, and them to actually be business owners instead of working for somebody. This is an opportunity for us to take charge with that.
We'll move on to our next question. We'll start with Eric Cunningham. As a college student, I am frequently asked where I see myself in 5 to 10 years. Where do you see Kalamazoo in 5 to 10 years, and what actions will you take to ensure your vision?
So I see Kalamazoo as a growing, thriving area. I was born and raised here, and just in the last 10 years, we saw downtown change dramatically to a place that we didn't want to go to. And it was just a drive-through area. Now it's a place where it's fun, it's engaging, and we are able to really just see a different vision for our community. I do want to see more access for biking. I do want to see more access for our elderly. I do want to see more engagement with our children. And I think in 5 to 10 years, that'll be the vision for our community, for downtown and citywide.
Charlie Koss, same question on where you see Kalamazoo in 5 to 10 years.
One of the great things about Imagine Kalamazoo is that it brought out a lot of people to interact with the government. They are the government, so they interact with the people who are facilitating their wishes as acting as the government, us, the civil servants. This input was really important to the Imagine Kalamazoo. Imagine Kalamazoo is about planning the future. And I think if we can keep that energy going where you have citizens involved, sure, we can develop the riverfront, we can develop the downtown area, we can do all those things, that's great. Those are all, they need to be driven by the citizens and the people of the city. That's what's really important. And one of the things that we can do is create a very good interactive portal, make a citizen self-service centric to our government so that we're acting more as facilitators for them rather than trying to guess what they want and trying to lead through guessing. I'd rather act as a facilitator for people.
Thank you. Aaron Knott.
So Kalamazoo is uniquely situated, halfway between Detroit and Chicago. We're 30 miles from Lake Michigan. We're home of the promise, and we're home of the Foundation for Excellence. I think all of these things layered into the master plan that was just approved by the Planning Commission, that the City Commission is going to look at next Monday, is going to pole vault the city. As Eric mentioned, 10 years ago, folks weren't going downtown. When I was a student at Western Michigan University, I was told not to come downtown. And we have a vibrant downtown Kalamazoo. It's a destination for all of our residents. I think in 5 years, you're going to see our neighborhoods lift up. You're going to see more housing. You're going to see commercial corridors redeveloped. You're going to see connected cities. You're going to see the commission pass a complete streets policy and a climate action plan. These are all baked into our master plan. And I think that in 5 years, you're not going to recognize Kalamazoo.
Jack Urban, same question for you. Where do you see Kalamazoo in 5 to 10 years? And what will you do to ensure that vision?
Well, I see in 10 years the ideas that are in the master plan that's going to be hopefully approved next city commission meeting, that'll be bearing fruit, that we'll have increased our tax base to the point that we've recovered from the Great Recession in 2008 and 2009. We'll have many fewer one-way streets. We'll have walkable and bikeable communities. We'll have pedestrian-friendly storefronts. More multifamily housing in areas outside the areas that are current there. And hopefully we'll also see a much decreased degree of separation between the races in Kalamazoo. I would love to see that.
Chris Wamhoff, as we go to the candidates for mayor on the same question of where do you see Kalamazoo in 5 to 10 years? And what actions will you take to ensure that vision?
Oh, man. I decided to run for mayor right after I read the incorporation for the Foundation for Excellence. Kalamazoo has done philanthropy 6-to-1 more than the rest of the country. And we've got more violence and we've got more inequality from that. We just doubled down and we just privatized a third of our budget in something that's never happened in the country before. I think the same thing is gonna happen at a consolidated rate that's happened over the last 5 years for everybody in my neighborhood. And that's why I started running. I do think that you can do good things with the foundation, and I think it's important right now, before the money gets spent with it, that we decide who's controlling it, because that's up for grabs. The first part is we've got to have transparency and we've got to have control over that. And I mean we as in a community, not we as in some board that's selected by somebody. The second part is that we have to start looking at local answers. We can't rely on the state and federal. Thank you.
And Bobby Hopewell, same question for you.
Seems like I'm agreeing with Commissioner Knott a lot and Commissioner Urban. My plan is to move the vision that we spent and you spent 15 months creating, 3,500 individuals participated in determining how they want their city to be by the year 2025. We talk about a master plan. You've heard that tonight. That is a land use plan, how we want our land to be used, how we want development to happen, that sort of thing. And then we have our Imagine Kalamazoo, which they're both are part of it, vision, the strategic vision, what you want, what you aspire for in this community, more affordable housing, our youth being able to find a path forward, bettering graduation rates, decreasing poverty. That's the work I'm going to be about, working your vision. Those are the actions I'm going to take. I'm going to use that to guide everything I do and every decision I make for our city.
For the next question, we will start with Charlie Koss. And this question comes from Western Michigan University's urban politics class. And the question is, would citizens get more effective services at a lower rate if more functions were contracted with private companies?
Privatization of public services has been an ongoing debate for many years. I mean, you have some cities that privatize out police, fire, et cetera, and there's some services that are core to the foundation of what a city should have. So there are certain areas, parts of the water system, maybe certain social services might be, if we have the proper companies that could handle that could partner with us and outsource that. I would say it'd have to be on a case-by-case basis that there are some areas that you can create efficiencies there. You always have to worry about that because as a government, you have police powers. And so certain things that are entrusted with the with an organization like a city can't be outsourced. So again, it's case by case, but I think there are areas that you should look at to make it a smaller government.
Thank you. Aaron Knott.
I think quickly, perhaps, but privatization comes with some risk. What is the quality of the service? What is the oversight? Who's accountable? What is the transparency? These are all conversations that have recently come up through the conversation related to the Foundation for Excellence. How are we going to know who's making those decisions? Will those decisions be, will they have to adhere to the Open Meetings Act? So I think that, as Charlie said just a minute ago, perhaps on a case-by-case basis, but overall, I think that municipal services and government should not be privatized.
Jack Urban, same question for you. Would citizens get more effective services at a lower rate if more functions were contracted with private companies?
Well, I'm skeptical of private entities being able to do a job better or cheaper than city employees can, especially if the expertise involved is generally available. We have to remember that when you privatize something, they expect to make a profit, and it's usually 50, maybe around 15%. Well, when you tack that on for them, we as a city should be spending maybe 15% more than what the contract was just to provide the time for the oversight of this private entity that's doing the work. Because private entity without oversight is not going to give you better results. So I'm much aligned with Commissioner Knott on that one.
Eric Cunningham.
Once again, this is a case-by-case scenario. Sometimes privatization can do it cheaper, better, faster. But in some situations, are they adhering to the same standards, both locally and state and federal? And it's just a case-by-case situation.
Candidates for mayor, we'll start with Bobby Hopewell.
Again, similar answer, but I'm going to use examples. I'm a paramedic. I have been, or my license is expired right now, but working on getting it back. I worked for a service Life EMS that provides service to the city of Kalamazoo, has a contract, a private entity contract with the city of Kalamazoo. Costs us nothing. We don't pay a subsidy, but we have all kinds of clauses in there in regards to performance and quality. That's the issue. Performance, what's the value you're getting for privatizing something? And then on the other end of the spectrum, we just limited or lessened our privatization to our work, for our road work. Our city crews have taken on more of that. They've gotten some enhanced training. They've done quality work. We've been able to do more roads at a less cost and as high quality as we would have in privatization. So it all depends. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it's not the best.
Chris Wamhoff, same question for you on whether or not citizens would get more effective services at a lower rate if more functions were contracted with private companies.
All right. Well, given my base answer, I'm sure everybody's going to be surprised when I say no. I don't think it's better with privatized services. Mostly because I really tried to think why it was my turn. Is there a corporation out there that I want in control of my water? Or have I been happy with what I've had with Consumers Energy for running the energy? And I don't. I think there are ethical corporations out there, but I think we need standards before we can talk about that. And I can't think of an instance. I literally can't think of an instance where I've seen privatization, specifically privatization in Michigan, work out for any city.
Move on to our next question and begin with Aaron Knott. This is somewhat related. The Citizens Research Council issued a report in the spring saying that services could be delivered more effectively and with less expense if they were done more at the county level. This would, of course, require local governments reaching agreements. Is that a good idea? And can you do more than perhaps the regional dispatch? We'll start with Aaron Knott on this question.
Sure. I think that you're going to hear a similar response from all of us because we have been talking about, as a community, how do we increase intergovernmental cooperation? You know, dispatch is one example. There's examples as it relates to the fire marshal or housing code inspections. We could go on and on. Consolidation of services throughout the county will reduce the cost. It will provide an economy of scale, but it's going to take the commission and the county commission and all the township leaders to come together and to iron out those details. And I think that that's the first step. Is we know that intergovernmental cooperation works. We know that it's going to drive down costs, but we got to get all the players in the same room to figure out how we're going to divide and conquer that ownership.
Jack Urban, same question on consolidating services, perhaps at the county level.
I think that would be wonderful if we could pull it off. I think there's some that especially would lend themselves to that. One is back office operations of police forces. I think better placement of fire stations and cooperation there would be wonderful, building inspectors and so forth. But let me just say that there's a lot of power in all those separate jurisdictions. They all have salaries. They all have family that depend on their jobs there. And the people have to rise up and insist on it happening, because unless the people rise up and ask for it, it's not going to happen, because these jurisdictions like their local control a whole lot.
Eric Cunningham.
So it's still another scenario where it's case-by-case basis. I think the important thing is, if you are casting a vote in this election, that you find someone who has great character, who has the ability to communicate, to be able to be a diplomat in regards to intergovernmental cooperation. So I think that it's definitely needed. I think that it is something that's the next wave of our future. And I think as the next generation comes along, that's something that they'll respect. Seeing that less of the divide as we've normally seen in politics in the last few years. So I think it's definitely possible. I think that is something that we're moving towards, and I think that everybody who is up here will probably agree to the same.
Charlie Koss.
Let's see. Well, as you may know, the county levels have a different level of authority than the cities do. They have a different structure within the state, their availability to manage funds and do certain things. So there can be some benefits to moving things up to the county level. There are certain things like, geographically speaking, certain things like metro make more sense in a regionalism container, where even you might even go multi-county in certain interregional areas. There are other areas that are specific to communities, and at the county level, the county wouldn't have that kind of citizen involvement, citizen input that's going to work for that. So. Certain things absolutely have to work at the lower or community level. Certain things are probably best to be the purview of the city itself. But like I agree with everybody else that if you have cost sharing or technology sharing elements, those could work at the county level where appropriate.
Now we'll go to the candidates for mayor and start with Chris Womhoff on the same question.
I think there's an important line between consolidation and collaboration. I'm all for collaboration. For instance, Battle Creek has a mobile clinic, and Kalamazoo County does not. And I would love to get that here. There are other things that we've already talked about with our Blue Ribbon panel about a regional authority for water. Those things I don't want consolidated. I think it's good to collaborate. I think it's good to share our toys, as it were. But I don't think it all needs to become one.
Bobby Hopewell.
Case by case, you look at the services that you provide. What makes more sense? I think there's opportunities with regards to detectives. I use the example that if someone's committing a crime and they break into my house on Stewart Avenue, they don't care that it's in Stewart or in Portage or in Schoolcraft. We have detectives, all of us, running around, sometimes chasing the same folks. I think that's an opportunity to come together and work harder at that piece of it. We're looking at 911 consolidation. That's an opportunity right there. Again, I work for an ambulance company. Actually, Life EMS is dispatched from Grand Rapids right now, every day, and has been for 20-plus years. We can do this beyond it having to absolutely lie in our place, whether it should be county government or more consolidation, more service collaboration, more coming together. I think that's the work. We look at the individual items and try to adjust how we do things before we go for the big pie.
Our next question, again, comes from the urban politics class at Western Michigan University. We'll start with Jack Urban. Do you believe that walkability is important to the health of Kalamazoo? And if so, what would you do to improve walkability in the city?
I certainly do think walkability is important. I like city life. When I go to Toronto or Washington or any place, I like to be on the street and be able to look in the storefront windows and have a variety of opportunities to spend and to see just simply by walking, not having to get into a car and go to another place, find a parking place, get back out, try to find the next place. I'm a big proponent of that. I think it can increase the intensity of economic activity in our downtown and in the neighborhood commercial zones, and that's going to be generating more revenue for people who own the property and operate it, and more tax revenue for the city. So it's a win-win. One way to help this, I better stop.
Eric Cunningham, same question for you on walkability in the city of Kalamazoo.
So it's very critical. When we talk about Imagine Kalamazoo, that was one of our primary things that our neighborhood said that they needed was better sidewalks. When we think about our disabled and we think about the issue of snow, we want to make sure that we're addressing that thoroughly as a community. So we want to make sure that we are investing in our infrastructure. And that's something that Imagine Kalamazoo Foundation for Excellence and our master plan will be focusing on and has been focusing on. And it finally gives us the opportunity to have aspirational goals in that light. So I've had the opportunity to travel the world. One place that's really fascinating to me is Amsterdam. And if you've ever been to Amsterdam now, it's a lot of walkability. But one thing that's unique about it is the biking system. I've never seen a place where there were more bikes, there were more parking spaces for bikes than there were for cars. So I think that these are the type of visions that we can have for our community, and walkability is a part of that.
Charlie Koss.
Walkability, I'm surprised that bikeability wasn't part of that question because they go hand in hand. Usually the infrastructure is set up similarly. I live on a street where there's a gentleman who lives near me who's about 85 years old, walks every day. He's an incredibly healthy man, but he has a path about this wide on the side of the road that that we have to walk through to get out of that neighborhood, and cars go by at 40, 50 miles an hour. Walkability is important in the neighborhoods because what it does is help support local businesses. So you have the local grocery store, the local shops, you have neighborhood associations, all these things that are so essential for neighborhoods to have strength works around walkability and walking between neighborhoods as well. So I'm glad that Imagine Kalamazoo put a lot of walkability in, a lot of biking lanes, a lot of bike paths, and I think the future is in trying to support pedestrian traffic.
Aaron Nutt.
I think that walkability is important for the future of the city of Kalamazoo, and we heard that repeatedly during the Imagine Kalamazoo 2025 process. Over 3,500 respondents told us that they want to see more walkability and non-motorized opportunities to get around our city. So we've heard about the Imagine Kalamazoo 2025 process. The strategic priorities include things like passing a complete streets policy, increasing non-motorized traffic opportunities. And this complements the master plan that we're looking to approve next Monday night when we work on creating commercial nodes as well as connected communities and neighborhoods so that neighbors can traverse their particular area to shop, to go to community parks, to get to downtown. So I think that it is a priority. We've heard that repeatedly from constituents through Imagine Kalamazoo as well as folks that actually come down to the city commission meeting and talk to us.
Bobby Hopewell, now hear from the candidates for mayor.
If you'd write this down, imaginekalamazoo.com, and we also have a website, kalamazoocity.org. That's the work we've been about for the last 15 months. In that plan, it talks about what we want to do for streets and sidewalks. And what's interesting, one of our first projects from the Foundation for Excellence and the Strategic Vision was putting in sidewalks on Woodward Avenue on the north side of Kalamazoo. That was one of their number one priorities that came out of the strategic visioning process. And every neighborhood, once the master plan is completed, that land use plan, will come together and develop more concrete tactics. So we've been up here, we've set some goals and missions and visions. Now we're gonna move it into the tactical to deliver. And we deliver on these opportunities through the city's budget that we approve by February of next year. We'll start setting priorities over the next couple months. You need to be involved in that budget setting priority process.
Chris Wamhoff.
All right. This is one of the areas where I would love to see us kind of break the mold and do some of the newer technology we are seeing in these other countries. Specifically about walking ability, I'd like to start seeing us use some of the recycled rubber to make the sidewalks. Especially for a climate like Michigan, it's been shown that it stops breaking up with the ice. It has a lot more durability. When Eric mentioned about infrastructure, we have a lot of messed up walkability. Before we talk about expanding it, we have to figure out how we control the walkability we have because it's a mess. And if we're getting this money from the foundation that's going to go for these sidewalks, I think we need to do something that's going to be more sustainable than something we've got to replace every 2 years and then we can't replace in 10 years.
This is going to be our final question of the night. So again, candidates, you will have a minute and a half on this question. How you use the extra 30 seconds will be up to you. And we are going to start this question with Eric Cunningham. What is the proper role of the City Commission in providing oversight for how money is spent on city projects from the Foundation for Excellence?
So we have bylaws. I think essentially that will be the guidelines for everything in regards to how the money is spent. Everything will be presented to the City Commission. Ultimately, the City Commission will make the decisions on how that money is spent. So the importance of that is who you are picking right now, who you will invest your vote in, will be the leader of your future, will be the individual to make those decisions. And you want to make sure that they have strong character. You want to make sure that they leave no policy unturned. You want to make sure that they do their due diligence and they're accountable to you as 70,000 residents here in this city. So I think that that is very important. That is something that as a commission, it will take at least 4 votes to move anything forward. And come November 7th, I am personally asking for the honor to continue to represent you.
Charlie Koss.
We've been gifted with this incredible foundation for excellence. And if we're going to move ahead with it, we need to have full transparency. We need to have proper controls over it. And we have to have a very clear vision of how it's going to be spent. I happen to think that it should be spent to drive the taxes down, to create opportunities for businesses to come here, to create more jobs, and to do core essentials, which the local government are needed for. I know a lot of people on the commission are thinking about all these pet projects that they have. I don't think that's a good way to go. I think we need to manage it very conservatively. We're running $4 million deficits. We have a huge huge debt that has to get serviced. So to borrow Dr. Kobrick's phrase, we have to learn to do less with less. We have to start thinking that way, think about how we can be more effective with the dollars that we have, and worry about in the outlays 10 years from now what the future is going to be. I'd really like you to vote for me. I'm Charlie Koss. You can go to votekoss.com, and I have all my issues up there. If you have any questions, just call me or email me. And the most important message I have for tonight is that you are the future, you are the citizens, and citizen-centric government is the most effective government. So get involved and make sure other people get involved. And the more people are involved, the better our citizen-centric city will be. Thank you.
Aaron Knott.
So the Foundation for Excellence is just one tool that the city of Kalamazoo has that funds work that we're doing, right? It's one tool. We have a budget right now of $144 million that the mayor referenced a few minutes ago that will be passed by February 1st of next year. Recently, the current commission approved bylaws and articles of incorporation that included processes for accountability and transparency. One of these processes includes the formation of a board of directors. It will have a supermajority of residents that serve on the board. So 9 out of 15 seats will be residents of the city of Kalamazoo. Additionally, the Foundation for Excellence will have to adhere to the Open Meetings Act. But the buck stops with the current commission or the future commission. They will have ultimate authority for how to prioritize and fund projects. But voters every 2 years have the opportunity to vote new members into the commission. So if you don't like how a current commissioner is voting or behaving, you can vote them out in 2 years, or you have an opportunity to vote every 2 years. I'm running for re-election. I have loved serving for nearly 2 years on this Kalamazoo City Commission. I hope that you'll consider supporting me again. You can go to my website at aaron4kzo.ruck.us for more information. Thank you.
Jack Urban.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that the board of the foundation is going to have as its main job raising the money. We're talking about spending or investing this money we don't even have yet, okay? So the people on the board, one of their big tasks is to assure donations, to have the principle that we need that will generate the interest that the city can use for its projects. In every case, the city controls how foundation money will be, I would not say spent, I would say invested. Let's think about how that money that comes from the foundation, which is about 38% of what our city general fund budget is right now, will be coming from the foundation. The staff is going to prepare the prioritized budget based on the priority-based budgeting principles that the city has adopted over the last few years. But the commissioners approve that. So we, as a commission, have the ultimate say in that. You can vote for us or not, or choose someone else. I hope you'll vote for me. Go to my website. It's Urban for Kazoo. That's what it is. I'll lead you to my Facebook page. Please consider voting for me and returning me to the office that I would love to see continue to work in.
And now let's hear from the candidates for mayor, beginning with Chris Wamhoff. The question again is on the proper role of the City Commission in providing oversight for how money is spent on city projects by the Foundation for Excellence.
I think there's three big steps we got to take for the Foundation for Excellence for it to work for people. The biggest step, and it hasn't been mentioned yet tonight, is that when we saw the Articles of Incorporation, it turned out that there were going to be potential restricted strings, which meant people could donate money, and those people that donate the money get to decide where it's at. Now, we can say that all of this money is going to be restricted because it's used for the city of Kalamazoo. That's not what I'm talking about. Two city commissioners started whistleblowing about this, and they brought up this amendment, and it was voted down, and we were told that this is going to work on trust. Look at the city minutes. We're going to trust that the people we don't know that we're going to appoint are going to do the right thing. That was what we were talking about when they voted on it, and that's why I'm running for mayor. We have to honor that amendment so that whoever is appointed at the board are the people that are going to make the decisions. Second is those need to be publicly elected, not appointed by somebody. We need those people publicly elected on that board, not city commissions. We need those people elected. And third is we have to look past newspapers at this point. You have to get involved and you have to look at the meetings because it's not transparent.
Bobby Hopewell.
So real quick, we have this different view of what the foundation is supposed to do. The foundation is no different than the federal government providing us funds or the state government or the tax dollars you pay. It is a funding source. It does nothing until the city commission, which is the question, tells it what we want. Just like with the feds, when we are wanting to do community development, we go to the community development block grant funds and we provide a consolidated plan, and that plan gets funded. We, the city commission, your mayor, your vice mayor, we determine the priorities, not the foundation. They are a funding source. So I take exception, one, to this thing about pet projects, because we've been talking about a city's vision that you helped develop, and that's what the foundation's role is for, to fund that vision. We've taken those steps to deal with debt, haven't dealt with every piece of our debt, but we're working on that. And let's talk about this restricted funds for a minute. If you have a foundation and you believe in poverty, and you see what we're doing here, and you know one of our priorities is poverty, and you want to give only to poverty and not to economic development or sustainability, I'm okay with that because it serves our purpose. If you want to have a string attached that says you're going to do only the poverty programs I say or other things I say, that's a strings attached. It's not the same.
Thank you. Candidates, thank you very much for coming out tonight. We also want to thank our audience for coming and for contributing your questions. Remember, Election Day is November 7th. Voters are going to elect a mayor to a 2-year term and 3 members to 4-year terms on the Kalamazoo City Commission. On behalf of WMUK and Western Michigan University's Institute of Government and Politics, thank you and good night.
City Commission candidate Leona Carter was not able to attend the forum last Wednesday. She later provided this recorded statement.
My name is Leona Carter, and I am a best-selling author, a speaker, life coach, and founder and CEO of Carter Strategies. So why am I running for Kalamazoo City Commission? As the largest Kalamazoo Promise family, I am committed to serving my community and running because I recognize issues such as citizen engagement, understanding diversity and treating each other with dignity and respect, and community vitality continues to be ongoing concerns that need community voices. As a community advocate and former board member of various committees, including Vine Neighborhood Association, Kalamazoo Literacy Council, and the Community Action Tripartite Advisory Board, I will be a voice in the community represented at the table. Communities not at the table are usually on the menu.
You've been listening to a public forum for candidates running for mayor and city commission in Kalamazoo. Please join us on Wednesday evening at 6:30 to hear from the candidates running for seats on the Battle Creek City Commission.